WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Matt Piper. We don't know exactly when, but President Trump is heading to the Middle East now, ahead of hostages set to be released by Hamas to Israel.
This is going to be a very special time.
It's all part of a breakthrough ceasefire deal with Hamas orchestrated by Trump. Israeli President Isaac Herzog.
President Trump will be received by masses of Israelis, by the nation of Israel, in gratitude.
Our Tony DeCopel is in Tel Aviv.
In Hostages Square, we met Moshe Levy, whose family is preparing practically and emotionally to welcome home his brother-in-law, Omri Meron, a husband and father of two young daughters, one just 6 months old when Hamas took him into captivity. They haven't had an update on Omri's condition in more than a year. But after 737 days waiting, they hope that this night will be the last night without him.
Our Deborah Pata with more on the suffering in Gaza.
The United Nations says it's brought cooking gas supplies for the first time since March into Gaza, as well as flour, fruit, and meat. Around 170 trucks made it in today, but this needs to increase to 600 daily to ease the suffering.
Back here, the worst of a nor'easter along the Jersey Shore is set to happen in the overnight hours, but flooding was already an issue near Atlantic City, as CBS News Philadelphia's Ray Strickland reports.
I just love seeing just that power in the water, because it is just majestic.
But despite the scenic views, officials are warning for potentially dangerous conditions, and people living in Ocean City are already seeing conditions get worse.
In South Carolina, the Beaufort County Sheriff's Office is investigating after nearly two dozen people were hurt and four killed in a shooting early this morning at a bar. The owner says it was packed for a high school alumni event, as WTOC-TV's Madeline Bierstrom reports.
According to those cleaning up the bar today, that shooting happened shortly after 12:30 a.m. outside. There was a party for alumni of Battery Creek High School at the bar. When deputies arrived, they found a large crowd and several people suffering from gunshot wounds. Hundreds of people were in the restaurant when the shooting itself happened.
Authorities are investigating how and why a helicopter spun and crashed in Huntington Beach, California. Five people were hospitalized.
The crushed cockpit of that helicopter is still resting on that staircase more than 24 hours after the chopper spiraled out of the sky. Today, investigators from the NTSB and FAA were out here collecting evidence, trying to figure out what went wrong.
That's CBS's Andres Gutierrez, 24 hours after that happened. This is CBS News.
Brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Not only does Progressive let you bundle your insurance, they also give you round-the-clock protection. Quote today at progressive.com.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report. Throughout your day on 540 WAUK.
The Brewers beat the Cubs. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from AmFam Field, where the Brewers beat the Cubs 3-1 last night to advance to the National League Championship Series. Things got started for the crew in the bottom of the first with William Contreras at the plate, coverage on TBS.
And he pulls this one deep to left center, way back, and gone! The Brewers strike first in Game 5.
Solo home runs later from Andrew Vaughn and Bryce Turang. Jacob Mizorowski, the Miz, awarded the win. Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
Yeah, that Miz was gassed. I would have loved to keep him in. You know, we told him to empty the tank in that last inning. He was magnificent. He who's had some bumps in the road here during his first year, for him to come back again in this same series and pitch so well.
So the Brewers host the Dodgers here tomorrow night. First pitch 7:08 for game one of the National League Championship Series. In Milwaukee with sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
540 WAUK, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation.
And home to Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings from 9 to 11.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, partly cloudy, lows around 59. Slight chance of a rain shower on your Monday, otherwise clouds and 68. Cloudy skies, mid-50s for Monday night. On Tuesday, partly sunny, a high near 65. Wednesday, partly sunny, 61. 65 again Thursday. Currently, 53 degrees.
Pete Schwabba. On the next Nightlight from HBO's Task, I welcome Jamie McShane and comedian and host of the WGN Morning Show, Mike Toomey. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. everybody, Todd Allball here. Did you know Packer Love is international? Join us Wednesday from the Marcus Theater in Waukesha for the world premiere of No Packers, No Life, the story of Japanese Packers fans.
There's a Wisconsin story about our state, our team, who we are, and then there's a universal story about people from all over coming together, regardless of culture, distance, language barrier, and finding amazing community over something completely unexpected.
Join us Wednesday, 2 to 4 for the Todd Allball Show.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
State Senator Jeff Smith. We're talking about the Veteran Housing and Recovery Program. Republicans blocked funding for this.
They instead sent the governor a 16-page letter blaming him for this problem. Well, it was in his budget. Once the budget is out of his office and in their hands, it's up to them. Our job is to manage the funding. We could do it, but the governor can't. So it's avoiding our own responsibility by not addressing that.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
Tom Hartman here. You're listening to 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
I wouldn't get on this program with all of you fine folks every day and talk about how to do that through voting and through speaking out. I'm here with you every day.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
What are you doing as an elected official? You have no business in an elected office.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Go Pack Go. Thank you for having me.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Friday. I am Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I was up a little late last night watching the Brewers and the Cubs, getting my heart broken, but hope springs eternal. They'll be facing off in Game 5 of the NLDS tomorrow. First pitch is at about 4:08 p.m. We're going to have coverage with many of our Brewers affiliates across the Civic Media Radio Network. So if you live within the signal range of a number of our stations, be sure to go ahead and check that out if you are not fortunate enough to be going to that baseball game. Boy, coming right down to the wire. As to politics, we begin this afternoon where I left off yesterday, somewhat unsurprisingly, I'd say. We spent the last 30 minutes of yesterday's show, and if you missed it, don't worry, you can always find all of our prior programs at civicmedia.us/shows and also on Apple Pods and Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from. We spent the last 30 minutes of the show breaking down the sort of litany, the overwhelming fire hose of lies that are being told by both ICE as well as DHHS about the facts on the ground relating to protests in cities like Chicago and Portland about Donald Trump's mass deportation policy, about the fact that it is somewhere in the ballpark of 60 to 70% of those that have been snatched, disappeared, if you will, off the streets, have no criminal record at all. And there are innumerable now instances where citizens have been snatched off the streets of American cities. Why? Not really sure. Maybe it's because ICE is just racially profiling, since the Supreme Court said that that was just fine to do. It's a dark time in our country where, one, we can't rely on what the federal government is telling us, that they are lying about things as a pretext to foment mayhem, to foment unrest, perhaps all to get to the place where Donald Trump can invoke the Insurrection Act, which, as we discussed with Professor Josh Braver of UW Law School yesterday, is a very vaguely defined act with very vaguely defined facts that have to be proven in order to invoke the Insurrection Act. But what was interesting about what we were talking about yesterday on the program, again, this litany of lying, and what happened late yesterday afternoon, is that basically, a federal court judge agreed with my assessment that the representations, the factual allegations the facts that are being repeated ad nauseum by administration officials on any news program that will have them read faux news and other suspiciously biased news outlets. A federal judge agreed with my assessment that they are lying. The federal judge that I'm talking about is U.S. District Court Judge April Perry. She issued a restraining order late yesterday in response to a lawsuit brought by Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, their attorney general, as well as the mayor of Chicago. That restraining order coming just one day after Donald Trump threatened to imprison and jail both Mayor Johnson, the mayor of Chicago, as well as J.B. Pritzker for, disagreeing with the president. But the language that Judge Perry used in yesterday's hearing, and as of about an hour ago when I was still looking for her written decision, I don't think it's been published yet. I'll likely talk about it more on Monday. But the language that she used in yesterday's hearing was quite remarkable, and I wanted to start there today. She described the narrative of violence as claimed by the Department of Homeland Security as well as ICE as exaggerated and pointed to the use of tear gas and other military-style tactics against, quote, mostly peaceful demonstrators, a group that she noted in and around the Chicagoland area never numbered more than a few hundred. She also said this, made this observation that we've talked about frequently on this program, is that neither the military nor the National Guard are trained in de-escalation, meaning when you're confronting folks, engaging their First Amendment rights, as is all of our right here in the United States, that if there is tension building up, if there looks to be a potential conflict between, for example, ICE law enforcement or FBI law enforcement from the federal government and protesters, the National Guard is not trained to de-escalate those situations. I mean, we heard Pete Hegseth just a couple weeks talk about warrior ethos and that they're all about killing. Well, I don't want troops that are trained to kill as their primary objective, the military or National Guard, facing off against folks exercising their First Amendment rights. Judge Perry agreed with me. Now, here's what's very interesting. At the center of the administration's defense against these lawsuits being brought both in Oregon and Illinois is the administration's claim that there is a, quote, rebellion. But Judge Perry said this, quote, I have seen no credible evidence that there is a danger of rebellion in the state of Illinois, end quote. One of the other interesting moments in yesterday's hearing was the fact that the administration's lawyer, a guy by the name of Eric Hamilton, described the current scope of the National Guard's mission in Illinois as, quote, limited to the defending of federal property and federal agents. But when pressed by Judge Perry, the administration's lawyer, Attorney Hamilton, would not commit to the mission remaining limited to those functions. This is really important because all along, what the administration's been saying is there's a rebellion. These people are violent. So first of all, the judge rejects that. Second of all along, Kristi Noem, Donald Trump, Vice President Vance, Tom Bagman, Homan, they've all been saying, listen, we're just sending the Federal Guard to protect these federal ICE agents, to allow law enforcement to do their jobs or to protect federal buildings. But in court, where a lawyer is not supposed to lie, and if they do, they risk their ability to practice law ever again, the administration's lawyer would not commit to that limited scope, meaning just protecting federal law enforcement or federal buildings. He wouldn't commit to that when asked by Judge Perry. In response, the judge said, I am very much struggling to figure out where this would ever stop. In other words, if you can just make up out of whole cloth that there's a rebellion when there isn't, and even if that were true, you say, well, the primary purpose is to protect federal buildings and federal law enforcement, but I won't commit to that. They may do other things and I won't describe them to you. Yeah, the concern is, where is the line? How do you control those troops, again, that are facing off against American citizens? Thirdly, Judge Perry went even further. She said that she believed that the National Guard's presence in Illinois would actually make matters worse. I find that allowing the National Guard to deploy at the Broadview Processing Center or anywhere else in Illinois will only add fuel to the fire. And fourth, last but not least, Judge Perry basically came about as close as a judge can to calling the administration a dirty pack of liars as I've ever heard a federal judge come. She said that she had doubts about the statements, the facts that were presented by federal officials and their lawyers in court. She said that there was growing evidence that, quote, DHS's perceptions of events are simply unreliable, end quote. And that is precisely what I was describing and sharing with each and every one of you yesterday afternoon in the closing of our show. The temporary restraining order granted by Judge Perry will last for 14 days. The Trump administration has filed an appeal. Again, we are awaiting release of Judge Perry's full opinion. Now, what is interesting is that Kristi Noem yesterday in the cabinet meeting basically said that everyone else is the liar. All of these other head law enforcement officers that are from city or state government, that all of them are the liars. And of course, no one in the administration is lying. Take a listen to this.
And then I was in Portland, went out and back on Tuesday, and met with the governor, met with the mayor, met with the chief of police and the superintendent of the highway patrol. They're all lying and disingenuous and dishonest people because as soon as you leave the room, then they make the exact opposite response. So we're looking at new facilities to purchase. They're in Portland too, and we're gonna double down. And I told them if they didn't meet our demands for safety and security on the streets and work with us, then we were going to bring in more federal law enforcement.
So let me get this straight, Secretary Noem. Everyone else is the liar, the chiefs of police, the mayors, the governors, the heads of the state highway patrol. Again, just as a generic observation, I don't know law enforcement personnel to be particularly like progressive leaning folks. What would their incentive be to lie? They don't have an incentive to lie. The folks that have an incentive to lie are the ones that are trying to blow through all of our constitutional protections and convince the general American public that there is some sort of rebellion, some sort of imminent danger. The only group of people with the incentive to lie here is Kristi Noem, Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, Stephen Miller, Tom the Bagman Homan, and everyone else working in the administration. And let me be clear, I do not and will not hold individual National Guards members responsible for the lies and pretexts that are being sold to the American people by the folks that run these agencies and who have commandeered control of the National Guard. National Guardsmen and women are really good people, our neighbors and friends that volunteered to help out in disasters and to defend our country against our foreign adversaries, not to face off against citizens exercising their First Amendment right. And what gets even more ironic here is if you turn back your memories to the point in time during the Biden administration when Texas Governor Greg Abbott was deploying Texas Rangers to try to interfere in how the Biden Department of Homeland Security was securing the border in Texas, and Biden was considering federalizing the Texas National Guard. Oh yeah, Kristi Noem and Governor Abbott and everybody else, they thought that was going to be the end of our constitutional republic. She posted on X back in that time. If Joe Biden federalizes the National Guard, that would be a direct attack on states' rights. Over the last several years, we've seen Democrats trying to take away our freedom of religion, assembly, and speech. We can't take them. We can't allow them to take away our right to defend ourselves, too. South Dakota defends the Constitution. Except apparently when it's your guy doing the violation of states' rights, our freedoms, and the Constitution. When we come back, I continue the shutdown watch and the impacts on Wisconsin farmers. So don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
Drivers, Austin Cindric here. As a NASCAR Cup Series driver of the number 2 Discount Tire Ford Mustang, there's a few rules of the road I like to tell my family and friends. Tire pressure is critical to safety because underinflated tires are more likely to fail. Plus, properly inflated tires will give you better gas mileage. Make sure to check your tire pressure at least once a month or stop by a local tire retailer for an air check.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association.
Hey, it's Dan Haney. Join me weekday mornings between 6 and 9 as 540 WAUK presents All News All Morning. We start the day with everything you need to feel informed. Stuart J. Waddles has Milwaukee and local news 3 times an hour, followed by Leslie Lotto from the Civic Media State News Desk, CBS News, Mike Clemens in sports, traffic and weather, money and market updates. Start your morning drive with All News All Morning on 540 WAUK on 100.3 FM.
Oh, this is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
We are the National Park Foundation, and together with you, we're creating a future where every person, every generation, gets their chance at an unforgettable moment. Learn more at nationalparks.org/foundation.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for Matinee on Air, weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Happy Friday, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Just before the break, I described the fact that Kristi Noem has apparently complete amnesia over the fact that she and every other Republican was calling like for bloody murder back when Joe Biden was considering, but didn't, federalize the Texas National Guard when Governor Greg Abbott at the time had deployed Texas Rangers to interfere with the federal government's exclusive right to maintain border security. This is when Greg Abbott put effectively concertina wire in a river, and there were in the Rio Grande, and people were dying, getting caught up in it and drowning. There was effectively a standoff in a state park there. It was a really touch and go situation. Kristi Noem was just outraged, I say, to have Joe Biden federalized the National Guard, quote, in a direct attack on states' rights, end quote. But now, no problem. No problemo. And she actually got on Fox News back then and expressed her outrage. Let's refresh our collective recollections.
That stood by Governor Abbott's side. If you didn't stand with him in solidarity, I'm not sure Biden wouldn't have precipitated a real crisis down there.
Yeah, Sean, I went the actual day that that showdown was supposed to happen. People asked me why, when I heard the news, I immediately the next day was at the border. And it was because of what I heard Democrats encouraging the president to do. They were encouraging President Biden to activate our National Guard soldiers so that they would stand down. He actually was going to take control of our South Dakota National Guard and actually activate them so that they would not protect America. So recognizing the real threat that was to states' rights and how that would be the first time in history a president would pay a soldier to not fight, to not protect our country, made me show up in Texas the next day to let Governor Abbott know I'm here. South Dakota is with you. We will defend our Constitution. We will defend our rights, because the last several years, we've seen the Democrats take away our freedom of religion, our freedom of assembly, our freedom of speech. We can't let them take away our state's rights, too, especially our right to protect ourselves.
Make it make sense, right? This is bananas. Also, she was inverting all kinds of stuff. He wasn't federalizing either the Texas National Guard or the South Dakota National Guard to not protect Americans. He was considered federalizing them because you had a governor interjecting himself, sending armed local law enforcement to what? Make it impossible for ICE agents to do their job, for Customs and Border Patrol to do their job. So that was not okay then, but it's completely okay now, even though you do not have what you could have, I think, much more legitimately characterized Governor Greg Abbott's use of the Texas Rangers and local law enforcement as. That certainly looked a whole hell of a lot more like a rebellion. And we've got a federal judge saying there's no rebellion. We had an expert yesterday on civil-military relations saying it is only when law enforcement has completely lost control of a situation. Think LA riots. We don't have that here. There's not an argument that you do. By the way, if you've been watching any of the footage of these ICE agents or FBI agents, they certainly don't look like they're having any problem taking people down, do they? Seems like that's working just perfectly fine. So why is the National Guard there? Let's just ask Judge Perry that. What did she say? It looks like that the National Guard would only add fuel to the fire. Fascinating. And if this wasn't quite close enough to home, in the Chicagoland area, I want to play for you some sound. This is a WGN producer. This is Chicago's main television and radio outlet. She has been taken to the ground in this video. She is being cuffed. She is a news producer. There is absolutely no legal reason to be taking down, cuffing, and arresting or detaining news persons that are covering these protests and these interactions. But listen to this sound. There's a person videotaping this. She's on the ground with her hands behind her back, face pressed to the ground, glasses askew, and she's trying to identify herself so that her news outlet can be alerted that she's being illegally detained by ICE. Take a listen.
What's your name?
Debbie Brockman. I work for WGN. Let them know.
I got you. Yep. Debbie Browning?
Brockman.
WGN. Do you guys want to share your names too, or I'm just going to cover your face?
What in the hell is going on? I'm sure our good friend CJ has an answer. CJ, how are you?
Thanks for taking my call, Maggie, and I understand why you don't like to take my call, because you need to tell the whole story. Greg Abbott, the governor, was trying to protect the border of Texas when
Greg Abbott's job, CJ.
Day.
It's not Greg Abbott's job. There is a difference between federal law enforcement of obligations, which includes border protection, and state. That is states' rights. That's the 10th Amendment. Go ahead, sir. My question is not about the merits of Greg Abbott's position. My question is about the hypocrisy in Christie. My question is about the hypocrisy in Christie Noem's position. It wasn't okay then, but it's okay now?
When you have the president allowing 6,000 per day invited illegal undocumented.
That is untrue, CJ, and you are dodging the fundamental question. I am asking you, why is it, why was it not okay for Joe Biden to do that, but it's perfectly acceptable?
You can try to put it in a box.
I'll put you in a box all day long when you won't engage with me on the issue that faces Americans today. Different standards for Democrats than there is for the MAGA regime. It's all fine as long as we trade on racist overtones of fear of immigrants and lie about Joe Biden's record. Super fine. Well, I'm glad we solved that. We're going to continue the discussion about the impacts of the big, brutal bill and Trump's tariff terrors on farmers on the other side. Don't go anywhere. This is...
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
CBS News Brief. President Trump is on his way to Israel and Egypt to celebrate the ceasefire.
War is over. The war is over, okay? You understand that?
Moshe Lavi is a relative of Israeli hostage Amri Maron, who is among those expected to be released in the coming hours.
We rushed back here to prepare logistically, from preparing a bag to Amri, coordinating with the family. What are we going to do? Where are we going to meet? What are we going to say once it happens?
CBS News meteorologist Andrew Kozak is tracking the nor'easter slamming the East Coast.
We've already seen some areas across New Jersey flooding with 2 to 3 feet of water already breaching some of those shore points. We're likely to see more of this ahead.
Delaware called out the National Guard because of flooding, and New York Governor Kathy Hochul declared a state of emergency across New York City and much of the metro area. More than 700 of the 1,300 CDC employees who got layoff notices Friday are now told those notices are rescinded. CBS News Brief. I'm Michael Toscano.
The Brewers beat the Cubs. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from AmFam Field, where the Brewers beat the Cubs 3-1 last night to advance to the National League Championship Series. Things got started for the crew in the bottom of the first with William Contreras at the plate, coverage on TBS.
And he pulls this one deep to left center, way back, and gone! The Brewers strike first in Game 5.
Solo home runs later from Andrew Vaughn and Bryce Turang. Jacob Mizorowski, the Miz, awarded the win. Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
Yeah, that Miz was gassed. I would have loved to keep him in. You know, we told him to empty the tank in that last inning. He was magnificent. He was had some bumps in the road here during his first year for him to come back again in this same series and pitch so well.
So the Brewers host the Dodgers here tomorrow night. First pitch 7:08 for game one of the National League Championship Series. In Milwaukee with sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Normally, I prefer to see movies in the theater, but we'll have to rethink that when Minecraft 2 comes out. Variety reports a Minecraft sequel is in the works after the first flick made almost $1 billion worldwide. Not sure if you remember or heard this, but there is a zombie chicken baby scene that made teenage boys do very gross things in the movie theater. You might want to sit that one out and wait for it to stream. Minecraft 2 is scheduled to hit theaters July 23rd of 2027. Variety is also reporting that Bradley Cooper is in talks to star in the prequel of the Ocean's 11 franchise. The film will be set before the first Steven Soderbergh version of Ocean's 11 in 2001. This franchise is a remake of the original Ocean's 11 from 1960 that starred Frank Sinatra and some of his Rat Pack pals. The new film is rumored to be set in 1960s Europe. Margot Robbie is already on board to play the female lead. They are really milking this ocean thing. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
540 WAUK, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation, and home to the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, partly cloudy, lows around 59. Slight chance of a rain shower on your Monday, otherwise clouds in 68. Cloudy skies, mid-50s for Monday night. On Tuesday, partly sunny, a high near 65. Wednesday, partly sunny, 61. 65 again Thursday. Right now, it's 55.
Hey everybody, Todd Allball here. Did you know Packer Love is international? Join us Wednesday for the Marcus Theater in Waukesha for the world premiere of No Packers, No Life, the story of Japanese Packers fans.
There's a Wisconsin story about our state, our team, who we are, and then there's a universal story about people from all over coming together, regardless of culture, distance, language barrier, and finding amazing community over something completely unexpected.
Join us Wednesday, 2 to 4 for the Todd Allball Show.
where working people come to talk. It's The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Todd Alba.
Hey everybody, join us next time. You can win tickets to the world premiere of No Packers, No Life at the Marcus Theater in Waukesha, and Jane Matinere is in to talk about headlines. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I want to sneak in a couple of calls before we go to my next guest. And yes, I will get to the shutdown and the Trump tariff terror's impact on Wisconsin farmers. We're going to talk a little bit about the city and county's budget, and then I will circle back. But I want to give some love to our loyal listeners and callers, including my friend CJ. I hope you have a good weekend, sir. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Jeannie from Eau Claire, go ahead, ma'am.
You have the patience of a saint. I want to support that.
I don't know if that's true.
Well, in my mind, I keep seeing, as I watch live of what's going on in some of those states and those areas where there's protesters, I've seen people getting attacked and handcuffed, shoved to the ground. Well, anyhow, I keep thinking about the mob on January 6th, because I was watching live, and I had three different TVs, different stations. I'm watching this, of the people attacking, hanging Mike Pence, beating up police officers, lots of people, because we're going to the Capitol, you know, and it's like, I keep seeing that in my head, and I think, why in the Sam, you know what, didn't he call in any help? So that's all I got to say, and you have a great weekend. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeannie. Yeah, it is extremely frustrating, the double standards. Richard from Waukesha, happy Friday afternoon, sir. What you got for us?
Same to you. I have this out-of-the-box thought. You just think about it. Now, this thing that happened with the president in Israel?
Yes.
Was there money behind the scenes somehow?
Oh, well, funny that you asked that question, Jacob. I know it's further down in our sound cues for today, but I do believe we have a wee bit of a sound cue about the terrible conflicts of interest that basically taint the entire Trump family when it comes to their dealings in the Mideast. I believe that this is cut 40 to your point exactly, Richard. Might as well use the sound now since it's got queued up so wonderfully by one of our intelligent listeners. Take a listen to this. This is Andrew Cuomo asking Eric Trump, why is it okay for you to have this stable coin and be doing deals in the Mideast at the same time there's all these foreign policy things going on? And listen to Eric Trump not answer the question at all.
My question for you is, you know what the climate is.
Yeah.
Why would you put yourself in a situation where you get involved with crypto and have the UAE as one of your big customers, and then they get AI clearance for chips from the U.S. government? You know how that's going to look. You know what's going to happen.
That can't be a serious question. I mean,
but
Chris,
Eric,
why put your family
in the position? That's all
Chris,
I'm asking. It's a legitimate question.
Chris, I got involved with crypto because I was deplatformed from every bank in the country. Capital One called me in the middle of the night and said, congratulations, we're shutting down 500 of your bank accounts.
All that ensues out of Eric Trump's mouth is a litany of garbage. That I was deplatformed from banks? What are you even talking about? Banks are profit-making entities. They'll finance you and take your money. Ask Deutsche Bank, who financed the entire Trump family corporation for years and decades and decades. By the way, that was, of course, Chris Cuomo, not the former disgraced sex pest Andrew Cuomo, who's now running for mayor off ticket, but not, anyways, yeah, that was Chris Cuomo. Folks, let me bring on my next guest. I want to get in to the sexy topic of municipal budgeting. And Jeremy Janine joins me very frequently on this program, president and co-founder of UrbanMilwaukee.com. We're going to talk a little bit about the city and the county's budgets. Why does this matter to everyone? If you are in Ashland, Rhinelander, La Crosse, in the Door Peninsula, it matters because municipalities across this state are finding it harder and harder to balance their budgets and make them work year over year. And that's because despite the improvements made to local government funding in Act 12 a couple years ago, our shared revenue formulas in the state of Wisconsin for what the state deigns to share with local governments that deliver all the things that are non-political to us, you know, garbage pickup and snow removal and public schools and parks. Yeah, cities, townships, villages, they're all still struggling. Welcome back to the program, Jeremy. Thanks for your patience as we dealt with some of the day's news.
Thanks for having me. I can't promise fireworks like you just had.
Gotta keep it spicy. Tell us a little bit about where the city and the county's budgets stand in terms of their process and what comes next, and then we'll go through a couple of the highlights of each budget.
Sure. So looking at the city and county, they both essentially align. They both have traditional calendar year budgets, and they're both at the point where the executive branch, the county executive or the mayor, have proposed a budget. And then the review is underway by the legislative branch, the county board, or the common council. I suspect cities across Wisconsin right now are going through a similar thing, although as we'll talk about, the scale of it for those two governments is just on another level.
Yeah, it is. It is on another level. Let's do some of the highlights of what we're seeing in the city of Milwaukee's budget proposal.
Sure. And I guess I'll open with kind of a something that's consistent across both of them and is a bit of a canary in the coal mine for the rest of the state, a perfect Milwaukee's microcosm. And that's in 2023, and it really started in 2024, Act 12, new sales tax for both the city and the county and increased shared revenue. But for both entities, they're now having to make cuts because they have a structural budget deficit again. And the driver of that is inherent in how the state allows municipal finances to work. You're only allowed to increase your property tax levy, your primary financing source, by a small amount each year, equivalent to the value of new construction, and then a little inflation increase. But as we've seen on virtually any time we go to the grocery store, inflation has been running at more than a small amount. So every single year we have this gap that grows, and that issue just continues to compound even with this new revenue source. It avoided this is the policy forum's analysis, Wisconsin Policy Forum. Yep. It avoided a dire cliff, but there are still serious problems that will recur year after year after year. And the scale of Milwaukee County and the city of Milwaukee just makes those that much bigger problems.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me, the term of art that gets thrown around that is so important to decode for people is the concept of unfunded mandates. So the state requiring a municipal or local government to do X, Y, and Z, provide X, Y, and Z service, but not allocating or appropriating the funding that can make that happen. And certainly when you look at the city and the county, there's a lot of that that's going on. And even within Act 12 itself, one of the sort of conditions that was placed on the city of Milwaukee is both fire and police hiring and maintenance of force levels, those kinds of things, which I would argue, yeah, we want to be able to have more police officers on the street, but to require that in the midst of, again, these structural deficits keeps putting these incredible pressures on the city's budget. And we're seeing versions of this, again, everywhere in the state. Jeremy, give us a couple of the highlights that are specific to the city of Milwaukee's budget, some of the cost-saving measures that are a little bit more controversial.
Sure. So there's a revenue source that's controversial, and that is the mayor's trying to increase the wheel tax. And the real controversy is the timing of that. He wants the council to approve that before they approve the rest of the budget. That would allow it to go into effect earlier. That would generate another couple $100,000. On the exciting side, there's planning for a new library that's underway. I think there might be a little bit of friction there under where that new library goes. And I should clarify, not a new library, but replacing an old library.
Yes.
So it's an efficiency thought. The exciting thing about that project, and this will apply to people outside of Milwaukee that will probably come to this facility, is because it's supposed to be co-located with the Central Count facility for the Milwaukee Athletic, Election Commission. So that where all the absentee ballots are counted, that'll now be in a city-owned facility. The city recently has otherwise had to spend tens of thousands of dollars every year renting a building to do that because the scale of it's just gotten so big. And then they're moving a facility, starting to do that, move a facility out of the Menominee Valley. That'll free up highly valuable land. It'll also get a building with deferred maintenance off the city's hands and possibly provide a development opportunity in the central city somewhere.
It's an interesting budget. There have been efforts at the county level before Act 12 to find these other resource or revenue sources. And, you know, when you look at a wheel tax, just like a sales tax, what you see is that it is regressive in nature, meaning it's not based on income. It doesn't affect people in terms of the richer you are, the more you pay. It is an across-the-board wheel tax, which means on a relative basis, it takes up a bigger chunk of a working person's household income, and that can sometimes affect some hardships on folks. Tell us a little bit of the top lines, Jeremy, when we're looking at Milwaukee County's budget.
Milwaukee County seems to actually be, they have a smaller budget gap, but it's proving more difficult for them to solve. The city of Milwaukee has a $100 million structural deficit. Milwaukee County has a $47 million deficit, and the city seems poised to solve their budget gap without any real service cuts that are noticeable to anyone. The county, on the other hand, is proposing to eliminate 6 bus routes, reduce service elsewhere. Graham Kilmer published an article in Urban Milwaukee today about reductions at the Behavioral Health Services Division, that there are just a lot of challenges coming for the county that don't seem as easy to solve as the city's.
And when you think about that, it's interesting that you mentioned the behavioral health services. That is one of those unfunded mandates from the state. Every county in the state is required to provide behavioral health services, either on their own in a stand-up independent mental health hospital or in public-private partnerships, which is what we now have in Milwaukee County. So you're talking about one of these unfunded mandated services. And it's interesting, we've only seen an explosion in mental health needs over the last few years, not a decrease in those needs. That's true across the state. It's more acute in Milwaukee County simply because of population size. You're also seeing cuts happening to transit, which is not an unfunded mandated service. But most would argue, including the M7, including the Greater Milwaukee Metropolitan Association of Commerce, that having mass transit, having bus lines, and getting people to where jobs are is absolutely essential in order to keep businesses here and to keep Milwaukee going as an economic engine. So it's a perfect microcosm, not just for the entire state, where municipalities across the state are looking at these things that make life better but are not statutorily required on the one hand, and these state mandates for which they don't get the precise funding that would be necessary to fulfill those mandates in the form of shared revenue. It's a perfect symbol, Jeremy, in my mind, of this thing that all of us know that we need, transit, this thing that we know we need and we're required to provide, behavioral health services, and the fact that these are the two stones from which the county is trying to get blood, pardon the metaphor here, to make their budget work. Jeremy, writ large, we got about a minute left. What would you suggest folks from across the state take away from looking at the city and the county's budget?
Know that the Act 12 didn't solve budget problems, and that impacted everywhere from Janesville to Superior. It injected money into those communities, but it's going to have a real problem in the future. It might not be next year, might not be the year after, but it's coming.
Folks, that is Jeremy Janine, president and co-founder of UrbanMilwaukee.com. My greetings to Graham Kilmer. Jeremy, tell Maggie says hello. Check out their fine work at UrbanMilwaukee.com. We'll continue our budget watch and give you updates from time to time as that process proceeds. When we come back, I'm going to talk about the Trump tariff terror's impact specifically on Wisconsin farmers. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
Are National Guard troops generally trained in law enforcement? No. National Guard troops like those President Donald Trump deployed to American cities in recent months to crack down on crime are not generally trained in law enforcement. For example, police officers in Washington, D.C. receive 21 training modules in criminal procedure, but Guard members receive none. Their primary training is focused on crowd control. Milwaukee's police union president suggested troops should be sent to Wisconsin's largest city. Governor Tony Evers called National Guard troops the, quote, wrong people, unquote, for fighting crime. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
Here's a dose of reality. Driving under the influence of prescription painkillers is just as illegal and just as deadly as driving drunk. In fact, there are nearly 2,000 drug-related crashes every year in Wisconsin. Help prevent drugged driving and let's achieve zero preventable deaths on Wisconsin roadways. Driving on pills kills. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Departments of Health Services, Transportation, and Justice.
I love playing sports, especially for my school. And that's because school sports are special. It's where it's safe to fail. It's where we're taught resilience, where our fear becomes confidence. It's where we learn to get back up after every fall. School sports are where 7.8 million students go from I can't to I can.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Keeping you connected to your local community with real news and great conversation. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
The fall agriculture tourism season is underway. And from apple orchards to pumpkin patches, it's a great time to travel across the state. But have you ever thought about camping on a farm? There is a push to make a new law allowing farmers to host up to 3 paying campers without a license. Supporters say it's needed to help diversify their incomes.
To allow people to put a tent up in a pasture and experience stargazing, stay overnight in the pasture, and have rustic camping. When they're overnight for farm stays, pick up the eggs in the morning, have a farm breakfast.
That's Sheila Everhart with the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association. You can learn more, including where to go this fall, at the website WIAGtourism.com. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back, everybody. And I want to say special thanks to all of the folks on our text lines participating in our lively discussion this afternoon. Mark from Prairie du Sac, Lori from Hayward, Tom from Monona, Ollie in the Northwoods, Cam from Appleton, Kurt in Madison, Tyler in Wisconsin Rapids. You all are welcome to participate every day in our program. And remember, right now, we have a dedicated phone line and an email for you to tell us about the impacts of the big brutal bill, the shutdown, the tariff terror, the impacts of those things on your family. The dedicated phone line is 855-755-0771. You'll hear my voice on there asking you to share your stories with us. You may end up hearing them on air. If you'd prefer not to do that in a voicemail, you can email us at wematter@civicmedia.us. That email address is wematter@civicmedia.us. Because at the base of all of this, it is only if we give and present like the flesh, the real blood and guts, the real world impacts of these things on folks from our own communities that I think we can hope to break through. And so I wanted to do a bit of that before we hit the top of the hour. And at the top of the hour, really excited, I'm joined by an expert on healthcare in this country. Her name is Jennifer Sullivan. She's with the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities. You're not going to want to miss that interview coming up at 5 o'clock. But I wanted to talk about the impact of the tariff terror, the big brutal bill, all of these things on Wisconsin farmers. Because the latest ag economy barometer that was published by Purdue University on October 7th, so just this week, said that farmers nationwide, they are very concerned. Their economic condition is weakening, even though they are in a bumper crop year. They've got record high corn and soybean yields, my goodness. But they are not going to do as well this year. And here in Wisconsin, we produce over 60% of the nation's supply of cranberries. And the United States is the largest supplier of cranberries worldwide. Here in Wisconsin, our cranberry farmers export to the EU, Mexico, Canada, and China. If those countries sound familiar, they are the ones that Donald Trump has slapped some of the highest tariff levels on. And so when we look at our cranberry farmers, they are going to be disastrously impacted by Donald Trump's taco tariff terror and the fact that he seems to flippity-floppity every day. And just yesterday, Donald Trump was busy threatening another massive increase in tariffs on Chinese imports in retaliation for restrictions that China imposed this week on the export of rare earth minerals from China to the U.S. And it appears that Donald Trump, the great negotiator, is canceling a meeting with China's leader Xi Jinping. This is hurting Wisconsin farmers. There's no question about it. All of that economic insecurity and the pain that's impacting farmers is being made worse by the mass deportations. Recall that a recent ICE deployment here in Wisconsin scooped up 24 dairy workers in Manitowoc. Most had no criminal records, and the deportation of these entire crews was occurring. That hurts farmers. Here's what's interesting. Derek Van Orten was addressing a group of farmers, and they were expressing these concerns, and he said this. I cannot believe that he had the gall to say this. "We're trying our best to help you, so I would just ask that you stay in the business and that God will bless you." Wow. And he then went on to ask farmers to support a bill that he just proposed that would fine the farmers for employing undocumented workers, require the farmer and or the workers to be deported, and then try to return under a new program. So he basically says, good luck to y'all. By the way, will you support this thing where I'll strip your workers away from you and fine you? And I wanted to share with you this. A farmer was recently interviewed by PBS Wisconsin. It's as a dairy farmer, and he explained how critical migrant workers are to the dairy industry. Take a listen to this.
Any farm that employs anybody is going to have immigrants, any dairy farm. And at that point, we determined, based on everything that we know, that at least 80%, and I would guess 90% of the milk harvested every day in Wisconsin is harvested by immigrants. Well, there is no visa available for immigrants to get to work on dairy farms. The H-2A visa is for short-term employment, 10 months, and dairy is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So there is no legal way for them to get here. According to the directions from the IRS, if you look at the documents and they appear genuine, you accept them, and that's what we do. And all of our employees have green cards. If Congress isn't going to do their work, we still have to milk the cows. We still have to produce the milk. We still have to deliver calves.
And Donald Trump's solution to all of this is to strip farmers of their ability to make money through this tariff terror and the flip-flopping, and then to give them a bailout. But make no mistake, farmers know exactly what is going on. They don't want a bailout. They just want to sell their crops. This farmer calls that BS out strongly. Listen to this.
I have to ask, where do you stand on the White House's idea of helping farmers with tariff money that is being collected?
That's the most ridiculous thing. Let me explain to you.
Okay.
Your listeners, excuse me. Those tariffs I'm paying on inputs just this spring, and all of our parts, many of our parts come from other countries, all right? Just this spring, I go to my local John Deere dealer. I need a chain for my corn planter. I take it out of the box, John Deere box, dealt with these people for 40 years, John Deere part number, turn it over, it says made from China. Okay, I'm thinking, wow, that's odd. I just paid a tariff on that doggone thing. So here's the deal. I'm paying that tariff.
We'll let you hear the rest of that sound at the bottom of this hour. Coming up next, Jennifer.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Toscano. In Israel tonight, families and loved ones of the hostages expected to be released by Hamas are counting down the hours. Correspondent Tony Dokapil is in Jerusalem, where anticipation is mounting.
In Hostages Square, we met Moshe Levy, whose family is preparing practically and emotionally to welcome home his brother-in-law, Omri Meron, a husband and father of two young daughters, one just 6 months old when Hamas took him into captivity. They haven't had an update on Omri's condition in more than a year. But after 737 days waiting, they hope that this night will be the last night without him.
In Gaza, displaced Palestinians are returning to their homes, most of them in ruins after 2 years of war. Correspondent Deborah Patta.
2 days on from the start of the ceasefire, Gazans deprived of basic necessities.